I don't know how many times I've heard people say, I want to create an estate plan that disinherits the government. Not surprisingly, people don't like giving extra money to the IRS. Although eliminating all taxes through your estate plan is not necessarily easy, it is possible with the right legal advice. My guest this month is attorney Rob Mielek. Rob also gets that question a lot and is well equipped to provide some answers. I think you will understand and appreciate his comments. Now, here's our podcast. I don't know how many times I've heard people say, I want to leave all my assets to my children, to my loved ones. The last thing I want to do is leave something to the government. And so the topic of disinherit the government was something that I've heard quite often. And I thought, it's time to bring in an expert who can maybe respond to some of those questions that are often asked and give some insights. My guest today is attorney Rob Mielek. Rob specializes in estate planning and really is equipped to answer a number of those questions. And so thank you for joining me today, Rob.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
The first question, is it possible to disinherit the government?
It's possible. It may not be as possible as one would conventionally think it's possible, but it is possible. So let's kind of start with just a overarching explanation of what's out there. When I meet with clients, broadly speaking, my clients' assets fall in one of two groups, what I call pre-tax and post-tax. Okay, pre-tax are assets that at the time of death people have not yet paid tax on. Most common examples there would be traditional IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, 457s. Okay, so that is the group of assets that it is possible that taxation would be due and owing on those assets at the time of death. And the logic of it is pretty straightforward. And I'll just use a hypothetical couple. We'll call them John and Jane Doe. So John and Jane Doe live. They, like most people, put money in their retirement accounts. And when you do that during your working years, you do that on what is called a pre-tax basis. Most people who work are what are called W-2 employees. They have a set salary, they have a set hourly wage, whatever the case is. And certain money they choose, depending on the employer plans, to put away toward retirement. A lot of your larger employers may even have a 401k match, where they'll match the percentage that the employee puts in. All of that money is done on a pre-tax basis. So both John and Jane work during their lives. They work for regular corporations. They're W-2 employees. They set aside money with the intention of using that money for retirement. So now we fast forward to the day the second of John and Jane retire. That money is intended to be used for their retirement. They're no longer working. They need this money to perhaps supplement their retirement income. What happens there, though, is we don't know when John and Jane are going to pass away. So the best way I can explain this is now the next event in the chain is we're going to fast forward to the day the second of John and Jane pass away. Broadly speaking, whatever money they have is going to fall in those two camps, pre-tax and post-tax. The pre-tax money ordinarily would be subject to taxation because the logic is if you didn't pay tax on it during your lifetime, you have to pay tax on it at death. But we do have a planning opportunity because your human beneficiaries, the children in the example you gave, they will have to pay tax on that money, but charities don't. So most people are charitably inclined, at least to some extent. And if the goal is truly to disinherit the IRS, by having that pre-tax money all go to charities, it is possible to do that. The downside of that, of course, is that it's less money that is going to your human beneficiaries. I'll just give round examples. Let's say the pile of money is $200,000 that is not subject to, or that has not been taxed at the time of the second of John and Jane's passing. Okay, if it goes to the children, what happens? It's going to be taxed as ordinary income. Let's just say that the rate there is 25%, just to use round numbers. What does that mean? Well, it means $150,000 of that money goes to the kids, and $50,000 of that money goes to the IRS. A lot of people don't like that, but what's the alternative? We could allocate that entire $200,000 to go to a charity, but that is $150,000 less that the kids receive. So that's the trade-off. Can you disinherit the IRS? Yes. Do you want to disinherit the IRS? There's many other factors that come into that equation, and that's why it's important to sit with a financial advisor, with an accountant, with an estate planning attorney, to make sure that your wishes always come first and foremost, but you understand the consequences of living with those wishes and in implementing those wishes.
I think that explains it really well, Rob. And you're right, you have some choices to make. How important is disinheriting the government? So if let's say, yeah, I want to give my kids any money I can, and I don't want to give anything to the government, even if it means, yeah, there's some charitable components. What do I do? How do I do this?
Right. So the first thing you do is you identify the charities that you want to benefit. You know, different people have different charities that they want to benefit. Maybe it's a religious affiliation. Maybe it's a school. Maybe it's a worthwhile charity, things like that. So I always tell my clients, that's step one. Have a conversation with your spouse if you're married and say, which charities mean the most to us, right? That's step one. And then step two is allocating amongst those charities, because you don't have to treat them all equally. Maybe you want to give X percentage to your church and Y percent to your alma mater and Z percent to a couple of worthwhile charities. It is your decision. It is your money. I use that phrase probably 3 to 4 times when I meet with a client. This is your money. You have worked hard for this money. You have earned the right to determine who and what, in the case of charities, are going to benefit from your hard work after you pass away. So that's step one, is identifying that. Then I always say it becomes a math problem, okay? Because again, and the problem with the math problem is that it's not set in stone. In other words, let's take a couple who's in their, let's say, late 40s, early 50s, okay? It is very possible that a lot of their net worth is going to be tied up in IRAs or 401ks. That's entirely possible. But another couple that exact same age, due to different life circumstances, maybe they don't have much money in IRAs and 401ks. Common example right there is my farming clients. A lot of my farming clients are land wealthy and cash poor. Mm-hmm. Their money is in real estate. So it does require just an overall viewing of the picture. So once you determine the charitable intent, the next question is, can that charitable intent be met solely through retirement assets? So let's just say, you know, a common tithing percent is 10%. If at least 10% of your net worth is in retirement assets, then you can account for that entirely through the retirement. The problem is that if your intent is 10% and the retirement assets comprise 20%, well, that remaining 10% is going to be subject to taxation, but it is going to the children. So that's important to look at too. It's also important to look at what your situation is now versus down the road. One of the things I always tell my estate planning clients is, plan as though you're going to die on the way home from the signing. As morbid as that sounds, that's what I encourage them to do, because as time goes on, the reality may change. You know, in my case, just personally speaking, I have two boys who are 14 and 11. Well, God willing, 20 years from now, they're going to be 34 and 31. The circumstances may be different. I may want to give more money, less money, be more charitably inclined, less charitably inclined, whatever the case is. So it's important to have that flexibility and know that you should meet with your estate planning attorney if those life circumstances change such that you want to amend your estate plan.
So first of all, Rob, I'm going to ask a very, probably almost a yes or no question. Mm-hmm. Can a person do this on their own, or do they need an attorney?
Well, they can do the beneficiary designations on their own. They typically will need an estate planning attorney to implement the wills and the trusts, right? I mean, that's the difference. I mean, can it be done online? Sure. Is it reliable online? Maybe. It's possible. Anything's possible. I would think that for something as important as estate planning, wills and trusts and things like that, that you'd probably want an attorney to do that for you. But as far as listing beneficiaries, no. It's a matter of, if you work with a financial advisor, talking to that financial advisor and changing your beneficiary designation. Now, it's probably a good idea to consult with your estate planning attorney as part of that process. I'll give you just a quick example. One of the things that I see in my practice is clients come to me broadly in one of two positions. Either they already have existing estate planning documents, or they're starting from scratch. So my clients who have existing estate planning documents, when I review them, when I see charities accounted for in a trust, it's a red flag for me. And again, to be clear, it's not that I'm not charitably inclined. First of all, it's not my money. You can do whatever you want with it. Secondly, I like charities, benefit charities, no problem. But when you're providing through for the charities through the trust, I'm wondering if there's not a better planning opportunity out there. By having the beneficiaries of your retirement assets have the charities be the direct beneficiaries, as opposed to getting it to the trust, because that allows for, if not all the money, more money to go to your human beneficiaries that won't pay tax on those post-tax assets, but they're still being accounted for. In other words, what we want to do is we want to maximize the amount of money that the charities receive that your human beneficiaries would have otherwise paid tax on.
Well, and I mean, Rob, well said. You know, I'm going to follow up with something else you had mentioned, but, you know, so often people say, you know, I don't like attorneys. They gouge me financially. They don't care. They're greedy. All the negatives that you hear about attorneys. And what's sad is that they're probably losing the opportunity to really good planning that's going to accomplish their goals that an attorney can help with. Can they do it on their own? I think you're right. Some can. But for the most part, I think people are much better off meeting with an attorney to help them so they can understand, like you said, the trust, the will, the powers of attorney, and some of the beneficiary listings. You mentioned something, and I just wanted you to talk a little bit about this. The idea that maybe they already have a plan, but they need to update it. They need to maybe make some changes. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Basically what happens is most people, when it comes to estate planning, they know that it's something they ought to do, a step in adulting, if you will. They know it's the right thing. They create it. The problem is that it's kind of ingrained, at least in my experience, that estate planning is what I call a one and done, or a set it and forget it. And I completely disagree with that as an estate planning attorney. And I'll just pose it in a very simple way. I'll ask everybody who's watching this question. If you were to meet with an estate planning attorney today, would your wishes, your goals, your desires be exactly the same 20 years ago as they are now? Probably not. Life events occur in those 20 years. People might be born, people might pass away, people may get married, people may get divorced. There's any number of life issues that can change that would necessarily impact the estate plan, and we want the ability to update it. And if we don't update it, those changes aren't going to be reflected appropriately. So that's kind of the starting point for me, is to say, all right, let's change the lens through which we view estate planning. I encourage my clients to think of it as a fluid process, that if there is a life event change, let me know so we can update the documents accordingly. And what you said before about a lot of negative feelings about attorneys, believe me, I'm a first-generation attorney, Paul. I've heard it before. I know all the lawyer jokes, so you're not going to offend me in that regard. So I try to transcend that stereotype of being an approachable attorney, but I'll let people make their own determinations there.
Well, and I would agree, Rob. I think you're very approachable, and you explain things very simply and easily. So, Rob, I've got a question. The whole topic here is disinherit the government. And so somebody comes to you and says, Rob, above everything else, my number one priority is I want to disinherit the IRS. I don't want to give them a penny. Create a plan for me that's going to do that. Is that a good plan?
It's a good plan if that's what the client wants. It's always coming down to what the client wants. What I need to explain to a client in that situation is that the only way to accomplish that is through charitable intent. And again, when it comes to taxation, and I always tell my clients this on a broad level, Paul, I'm not here to say what's right or wrong. That is not my job. My job as the estate planning attorney is to let my clients know the consequences of action or inaction. So if a hypothetical client says that, I will say, okay, here is how we accomplish that. But know that the money that would have gone to your children is now going to have to go to charities to disinherit the government, and let them make a decision based on the scope and the amount of that money. Because I have some clients who, like I said, my farming clients, who don't have IRAs, they don't have 401ks, they don't have things like that. People who are self-employed may not have those things. We can disinherit the government very easily without having to have charitable intent. It all falls down to taking that financial snapshot of what is pre-tax and what is post-tax. And again, I know a topic we're going to be talking about a little later today is sometimes those assets can convert based on age, based on longevity. An asset that was previously pre-tax may become post-tax due to the passage of time. So that's all we can do, is look at the snapshot of now, and then as time goes on, we can always update it accordingly.
That makes sense. You know, another thing that's maybe kind of related to what you said, I imagine sometimes people are going to come to you, and maybe they don't want to tell you everything. They'll tell you some of it, and if you don't know the whole package, it's kind of hard to put together a plan that's really going to serve them well.
That's 100% right, and obviously there is the attorney-client privilege. I can't share any information that a client shares with me to hopefully encourage candor among my clients, but when my clients get in that situation, I always tell them a very simple analogy. I say, when you hire me as an estate planning attorney, basically what you're asking me to do is to put a puzzle together for you. I could be the best puzzle maker in the world, but if I don't have all the pieces in the box, I'm not going to be able to put it all together. And usually when I use that very basic analogy, people say, okay, I get it. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And for full disclosure, I'm a terrible puzzle maker in real life. My mind doesn't work that way. But when it comes to estate planning, I can put those pieces of the puzzle together and come up with something that makes sense for you and your family.
Good. You mentioned something earlier, Rob, about certain assets that will be taxable to the children or the heirs. When I'm creating my plan, how do I handle that? Should I be talking to my children? Should I make a different plan to minimize their tax consequence?
Well, I think it's more about education. It's about letting your clients or letting your children know that, hey, this is money you're going to be receiving. Before you go and sign a document saying you get it all right away and you incur a huge tax bill, consult with a financial advisor, consult with an accountant, consult with an estate planning attorney to make sure you don't get adverse tax consequences that you weren't aware of. Because, again, we're going to talk about this more in depth here, but the idea is that when you receive that money, when you receive money via an inheritance that is pre-tax, you don't have to take the tax on it right away. You have the ability to pare it out over time. And depending on your family situation, it may make sense, it may not make sense. But that's why it's always encouraged to get the advice of a financial advisor before you sign anything as it relates to money that you're inheriting that could or will be subject to taxation.
Yeah. Another thing that I've often heard is people say, and you've kind of alluded to it, but I want you to talk a little bit more on it. I want to leave money to my children. I don't really want to leave anything to the government. And I'm afraid that if I decide to give something to my church, that's really just taking it away from my children. And I don't want to do that either. How do they balance that?
I would say the phrase, you can't have your cake and eat it too, is kind of the first thing that comes to mind. That's really what it is. So, and that's what I always talk about when it comes to taxes. Like anyone else, I don't like paying taxes either, right? But you kind of have to do it. And the trade-off there is, yes, while there is money that is being subject to taxation, the government's getting a cut of it, until the tax rate is 100%, your children are still benefiting from that money. So basically, the first step that I do is I ask my clients, are you charitably inclined? Because if the answer is yes, then we have some planning opportunities, right? And then it's a question of, well, how much charitable intent do we want to have? And if the amount we want going to the charities is equal to or exceeds the amount we have in pre-tax assets, then yes, we can disinherit the government. If the answer is it's less than that, then we can disinherit the government somewhat, but we can't disinherit the government entirely.
Yeah, no, it's a good summary. You know, when I talk to people, I'll say, think of your family first. Some people think, well, you're working for KML, and so you're just going to twist arms to try to get gifts for the school. And that's not the case. I always think that your first priority is your family. Take care of, well, your personal needs, but also the needs of your family. But then if you're charitably minded, now we can start talking. And I think that's where your first question really, really applies.
Absolutely. Because what I found in my experience is a lot of people know, people aren't generally wishy-washy about charitable intent. They either know that they do want to provide for some charities or they have no interest in providing for charities. It's not one of those, well, think about it here or there. Or if it is, it's a relatively nominal gift that they're thinking about giving. And then my advice there is, well, give it during your lifetime if that's the case, right? But it all depends. And again, at the end of the day, I always tell my clients, you guys are my boss. My clients are my bosses. You tell me what you want. My job is to tell you whether it's legal or not. My job is to let you know what the consequences are of either implementing it or not implementing it. But at the end of the day, it's your estate plan. You determine your legacy.
Wonderful. Thank you, Rob, for explaining this. The wish to disinherit the government might be real high in your priority. And maybe it's something you can accomplish. I guess with so many of the other things with estate planning, I encourage you not to try to do this on your own. There might be some opportunities. We talked about beneficiary listings and so forth. But to understand the whole concept of the entire plan and making sure you have a comprehensive plan that really meets all of your goals, I think there's really value in meeting with an attorney who can help you disinherit the government if it's the opportunity that you have and right for your plan. And remember, we do this because it is your life, it's your plan and your legacy, and what a great way to make sure you leave the right legacy to those you want to benefit. Now one last thing before we leave, Rob. You talked a little bit about the IRAs and how those can affect an inheritance. Would you be willing to come back for another episode? Because I think there have been some things in the last few years related to IRAs, some laws that have changed the SECURE Act. Would you be willing to come back and talk a little bit about that?
I'd be happy to.
Fantastic. Thanks, Rob. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, not at this time. Like I said, the analogy, I'm big on analogies. I'm a big analogy guy because people tend to understand analogies. But just to kind of piggyback on your point about what I call the self-help with estate planning, I'll draw an analogy for you. Imagine having to change the transmission out in your car. Are there people who can do that on their own? Absolutely. There are people who are manually inclined enough. They have the physical dexterity to be able to do it. But most people don't. Most people can't. A lot of people who can have that or do have that ability and have the ability to get it done will oftentimes hire a professional to make sure it gets done properly. So to me, roughly the same percentage of people who have the ability to change out their own transmission might very well be the same amount of people who can create an estate plan. Maybe it's a different cross-section of people, but I'd say on a percentage basis, that's probably about what it is. So just wanted to kind of tie that that point together with an analogy that I think makes sense.
Yeah, very good. Very good.
For most people, the top priority with their estate plan is to provide for their loved ones. After that, other priorities come into play, such as designating a charitable gift or reducing any tax burden. I want to thank Attorney Mielek for his advice on this topic. With good legal advice, you can ensure your estate plan will direct your assets in the best possible way and maybe eliminate the IRS. If you'd like to learn more about effective ways to create a customized estate plan, go to our website at foundation.kmlhs.org or contact me at paul.snemiska@kmlhs.org. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.